Time for our first Techie Talk of 2021 with State Representative Jackie Chan of Quincy. Happy New Year, Jackie.
Happy New Year, Joe. It's great to see you after a couple of weeks, and I hope everyone that's listening had a wonderful start to 2021.
Certainly has been eventful on the national and the local front since last we talked. State Representative Ron Mariano, your colleague, is now Speaker of the Massachusetts House.
Yeah, we talked about this before we went on a little break. Well, you got a little break. I ended up working through the holidays, not looking for sympathy, people. But seriously, we had discussed before about Ron becoming Speaker. The votes were pretty much lined up, and it was just a matter of time after the Speaker, DeLeo, actually filed his letter of intent to seek employment at Northeastern University. Just a recap, if you're going to leave office, you have to file a letter of intent with the Senate, the House Clerk's office in our case, since we're in the House, that we're going to seek employment outside the building and want to negotiate a deal out. In the case of the Speaker, given his role as an individual who commands and controls such the calendar, and as a result of movement of legislation, everything he does and whatever employee he goes would be relevant. Issues that have been disposed of, meaning it was either passed in law or it's already gone to a study order or some means where there's no further progress on a bill, would not require an ethics letter. Matters pending before the legislature would require an ethics letter report. For example, in my case as chair of a committee, I would have to file an ethics letter report if I had pending matters in my committee that has yet to be dispensed with, has yet to have action taken. Once those actions have been taken and has reached a full conclusion, meaning there's no further movement, I could seek employment inside that field. But prior to that, I would have to file a letter. Speaker's case, because of the budget overrides, especially, that were yet to be done, puts him in that rather precarious position as a person who controls the calendar and a whole lot of override situations involving money and policies that may influence Northeastern University. So throughout the process, he ensured that he filed the ethics compliance letter, which is what he should do. And then we did overrides before Christmas and before New Year's. And right at the swearing-in day, we were doing overrides as well. So, there was a whole lot of phone sessions the last 2 weeks. But he also voted present. Speaker did not vote on any budgetary matters or budgetary policy matters throughout the remainder of his time here. Ron Mariano, a good friend, was elected Speaker the 30th. I actually did go to the State House that day. As the audience knows, I've been shying away from the public and had two masks on, didn't touch anybody, didn't touch anything, and had my wipes and found a nice little dead spot and refused to go near anybody and basically talked to him at a distance and didn't want to be within, anywhere near other people at all. So the Quincy Sun had a great picture of our colleagues, Dan Hunt and Bruce Ayers, and of course, Speaker Mariano. And I was not interested in being in the chamber longer than I had to be perfectly honest with everybody. I take the social distance thing very seriously, and not to say my colleagues did not, but everybody, was sanitizing and masked and all that. But as you guys heard me every single week so far, practically, I'm very concerned. And by the way, just a side note, hospital beds in the state has been 80% consumed, both ICU and hospital beds. So if we don't stem the curve, and yesterday was over 7,000 positive cases, we don't bend this curve more, and we get to closing 100%, which is happening in other states and beds consumed, and you have a loved one or medical injury yourself that does require hospitalization. Again, if you do need to go to the emergency room, definitely go to the emergency room, okay? So definitely go. But just be aware that if people do not continue to behave well regarding COVID and we reach 100% hospital room capacity, medical people are going to have to make a very hard decision who gets priority medical care into an ICU or get even a hospital bed. And these field hospitals will overflow for COVID patients. So again, I just want to stress right off the top of today's broadcast that, beyond talking about Ron and my desire to just keep socially distanced from everybody. You know, this is very serious. We still got basically 3 months plus of winter remaining with cold and flu season on top of everything else. And if you're having a stroke and we're at 100% beds capacity filled because of COVID-19, we, you know, our loved ones and ourselves will have a serious problem. So it is imperative to do COVID safety. And on a side note, also to take care of our personal health generally. And I think I can't be the only one on this call finding challenges on exercising and eating right. I've gone to comfort foods too, everyone. I mean, it's been tough. But, you know, at the same time, I've been working very hard trying to make sure I get, you know, all my loads of fruits and vegetables. And I got the exercise bike. And yesterday was a good day for a walk. Even though I'm pretty much always on my phone, you know, you're going with me for a walk these days. You got to do what you got to do.
Yeah, it's. I mean, we're seeing the surge on top of the surge, as everybody had feared, you know, both across the country and even right here in Quincy now, just topped 5,000 cases in the city, you know, since the outbreak of the pandemic. So it's here. And like you say, it is real, and it's going to be a little while before it's somewhat, you know, easing.
Yeah, and the second strain version is in the U.S. from Europe. From England. I'm sure that strain's already made its around the world. It seems like the original COVID, this thing moves so rapidly, so quickly, attaches itself to people so easily, they're asymptomatic, because it didn't take long to get to Korea from England. I mean, that's a long way away. So, you know, you continue to be asymptomatic. You do not have to have symptoms. You can be a carrier without knowing it. And I've heard more people now this winter carrying COVID-19 with illness than I did before. And some people are very lucky in the sense that, you know, their other family members did not catch it. But the person who got it was not well for quite some time. And we're also hearing stories of our friends who got it. And it's still basically kicking them in the butt 6 months later under repercussions, especially on the respiratory level. It's like having asthma, but you never had asthma before. And it's like all the time. So you have, you know, again, respiratory people that have any kind of respiratory problems, you know, higher risk, as I said before, bronchitis, me and winter seems to be married. So, you know, very cautious about that. And obviously we also need to get some rest, which I still don't know what rest looks like yet, because it's been going nonstop in this gig for such a long time now.
Yeah.
But back to Ron for a second. The other thing people have asked me already is, what am I getting? I don't know what I'm getting. I do not know what the speaker wants to do with his leadership team. I know he wants to diversify the leadership team. One of the challenges of the House right now is seniority. I've reached like top 15% of seniority in less than a decade. Well, now a decade, actually. So it gives idea the rapid turnover in the House. So people that have been there more than 20 years is thinning out very fast. Ron is now the abnorm, not the norm, so to speak. People in seniority. The talent pool is, you know, the talent pool. But one of the things about talent pools, you need some seniority because you have to know how things work. One of the reasons seniority is important is not just because, you know, you survived this long, but you've been around long enough to understand how the system operates. You know, you got the rules, you obviously got laws, you got to know how to interact with other colleagues. You know, it isn't, you know, even as a chairman, you don't have absolute power. You have to work with the Senate chairman because you can only do stuff with the Senate chairman. If the Senate chairman doesn't want to do it, you got to figure something out with the Senate chairman. As well as, you know, deal with the issues of the membership, you know, particularly your committee chair, committee membership. So, no, I do not know what's going on if people are asking.
Okay. All right. Well, wait and see on that one for sure. So, any significant overrides, Tacky, that you wanted to talk about from the governor's budgets?
We mostly did overrides against the governor's last post-COVID, in COVID budget. So, for example, the Norfolk County DA's office, and we shaved about 10% off their budget. We put that back in. A lot of the governor's budget numbers were just basically bringing him back to his original version. And he did it basically across the board. So like the Norfolk County Sheriff's Office, the Norfolk County Police overtime numbers, you know, they were all brought back to the level we want, not what the governor's budget said.
Okay.
We also, what's interesting is the governor actually left in place our earmarks. So we talked about earmarks before regarding money for COVID at the health center, money for Quincy resources, money for Germantown Neighborhood Association. He left those intact. But, you know, we also, you know, did a lot of just administrative overrides. And we want more accountability. So, for example, layoffs at the T, you know, it's, you know, we earlier heard about the furloughs.
Yes.
And, you know, we talked about the fact that 30% of the T's revenues are fare driven. So they have a 7% decline in ridership, and I don't see that changing anytime soon. So with 30% of your revenue and a 70% decline in that revenue source, it's pretty straightforward. So we just want to have better information updates. So we put our put back our language saying, hey, you know, just tell us what's going on.
Okay.
We have COVID reporting requirements on various reportings that we've done in smaller bills in the past. We continue that in the budget. So the way the budget overrides work is that we have to address these things as individual items. And the governor sent back hundreds of vetoes. So the process does require two-thirds vote of the legislature. And since we're doing this by teleconference, you have to read the roll by name individually and be heard via the phone and confirm that's you. And LIS has my telephone number on their side, so only they know it's actually me that's been called in. And of course, technical difficulties occur during these processes too. I've been kicked off the system. I've had my phone battery die. we've all run into, I think, all the same issues at home, working from home problems. So, you know, as you can imagine, you know, 160 members, you have to call them individually through a teller on our telephone. And, you know, they have to confirm, certify, give to the clerk. Clerk has to punch it into the computer system so it goes on the board. That lights up. And then that's logged into the system with the roll call number, and off we go. So what normally would take us, you know, 3 to 5 minutes is now taking more like 10 to 20 minutes.
Yeah, each. So, you know, that, multiply that by the number of members that are participating. Yeah, that's time consuming.
Yeah, very time consuming because of the telephone process. On the flip side, they keep seeing to call roll calls. I'm trying to make dinner. So I got to unmute because I'm like, roll call. Okay, we got to get this off the stove and go through this roll call process.
Yeah, so. a lot of burned suppers, I bet.
Yeah, well, one of the benefits you could say of this is that I'm actually eating like a human being. One of the drawbacks of late night sessions is you start eating foods you really shouldn't be eating.
Oh, yeah.
And the, you know, as I've said before, I have all kinds of dietary limitations. So I do go through a lot of starvation. And so, I mean, I'll be honest, one of the nice things about this is, you know, I can actually eat. I know that sounds weird, but eating to me is still very important.
Yeah, no, I can appreciate that for sure. Being Italian, food's a big part of my culture too, so I get it.
Yeah, I've been making an enormous amount of pasta recently, which is something I really got to cut back on the carbs. I'm very carb heavy again.
Yeah. Can we talk a little bit about national events, Tacky? We can't not. You know, it would just be a blatant, you know, blank hole if we didn't talk about what happened at the nation's capital this week.
Yeah, Wednesday is normally a very wonderful day for us. It's swearing in day at the State House. You know, I was sworn in via Microsoft Teams by the governor in groups. People who are newly elected, celebratory day for them to be in the House chamber, socially distancing with the governor to swear them in. Obviously, it was a very truncated session in the House. Then, you know, not long after we finished our swearing in, the crisis at Capitol Hill in Washington happened. So what was a very unusual and strange happy day for our legislators turned very grim and sad, like the rest of America, watching that news starting around 2:30 and continued on through the rest of the night and been in Thursday and today. And I've, you know, read multiple sources and flipped around to various news channels. And this is extremely grim day in U.S. history, and especially for America as a whole. And it should never have gotten to that level. And I don't care where you are in the political spectrum. I do believe that the, you know, 99% of us is in the political spectrum. We're expressing our opinions, and we all differ about various things. But this very small group of people has really hijacked the political speech that we have to something totally wrong and violent. This is no longer about partisanship. This is about simple facts of a president who has decided that he controls a message. He has people to follow the message. They do actually listen and do what he says, and they did it.
What do you think this means for democracy as a whole right now?
Well, as I said during the beginning of COVID, I mean, I'm still a believer in federalism. This is called the United States of America. Most people forget what United States mean. It's the 50 states united to form a nation. And the Electoral College is the representation of the United States. And I know we have different opinions about popular vote and Electoral College and where it's antiquated. But, you know, I like to remind folks, the United States means united. We don't have a country. You have 50 United States. And that's how it works. It's such a simple concept that people seem to forget about. And the ceremony of the Electoral College is a representation of the state's voice. Not just the voice of the voters. It's the voice of the voters via our state. So, you know, the rapid condemnation by the U.S. Senate and the U.S. House, as well as various media outlets, well, it is. But, I mean, folks in D.C. That continue to try to placate certain demographics for reasons of their own personal gain. Let's be frank about this, folks. You think they're being patriots and expressing their constitutional duty. Well, that's a load of crap. Take it from me. Who actually has constitutional duties too. And we have to respond to a constituency, but there is a point where your constituency and you read the email, you take the phone call, you do scratch your head. But apparently there's folks down there that feels that this is necessary to obey the will of a president as opposed to obeying the will of their people. And that's what you have. And I'm very disappointed and dismayed by this. This is not a partisan, nonpartisan issue. Hillary Clinton lost 4 years ago. A group of folks decided to object to the Ohio vote. Hillary Clinton did not ask for that. Obama did not ask for that. Biden did not ask for that 4 years ago. It was an independent move by legislators to do so on their own, made basically no news 4 years ago. And the drama was fairly short, quick, and dispensed with in Congress. This became a international globalist view. And I do know that people don't always care what other countries think of us. I do understand that. I mean, America first and all that concept. But it is a global world. The U.S. has been the leader of the world since the end of World War II. We've had a global economy since the days of colonialism. And right now, you know, if we want to maintain our status in the world, it is important for us to lead the world. And this small, very small group of people in this country, which I would not even call Americans anymore, because, you know, this is basically treason, you know, trying to stop a vote under the Constitution and our voice to be heard in the Capitol via the Electoral College, you know, is shameful. You expect this and saddened and dismayed seeing this in other countries, but not here. And people are like, well, we couldn't have known. People do what the president says. You've seen it before. People were using bleach because he said so. People did not believe in Georgia's electoral votes, did not believe that Georgia's election could have gone Democratic. It happens. This is why elections are unpredictable. Everything I say is not necessarily going to happen, even though I've been studying this stuff my entire adult life. And it's just very disappointing to see.
Do you think presidents should move from office right now?
You know, that's a very good question. I mean, it's one thing to say a lot of stuff and tweet a lot of stuff. It's another thing when you stand at a podium and tell people to march down the street to try to stop a constitutional revision of the duties of Congress. And he also said, I'll be right there with them. And of course he was not. Very typical of people who like to incite other people. I'll be with you, but never show up. So we were discussing a little bit before we started about this concept of the First Amendment, and that there is a time differential between the words and actions. Your First Amendment doesn't protect you if you say anything to incite illegal activity, but time is the factor. So if you say it today and it happens in a week, unless law enforcement can connect a whole lot of other dots to you from that day, your First Amendment rights are protected. In this instance, this president made a speech and they marched down the street and did it. The time starts from the moment it started marching down the street. But he is the president. He has protection from pretty much every single law, the impeachment process and Article 25 of the Constitution, which you've been hearing a lot in the news, as our safeguard against the president, to remove a president that's unfit or commits crimes of felony or misdemeanor. Now, misdemeanor is a very broad word, by the way. So, there is a responsibility here. And once he becomes a private citizen, there is some questions about whether his actions as president can be held against him. And I don't know the answer. I mean, my gut instinct as an attorney would be no. Otherwise, all presidents would have serious problems with their actions leaving office. So my gut instinct says no, but you never know. I mean, Justice Department of Justice and other much better lawyers than I will probably have a better answer than my gut instinct as an attorney. This is extremely, very disturbing, very disturbing. It's unpatriotic. It's treasonous. And I'm probably going to get some angry emails and phone calls saying, I don't know what I'm talking about. But when you tell folks that they need to go to the Capitol to stop our voice in government, that's troubling. And I'm also very disappointed by congressional members that thought this was okay, trying to placate groups want to disrupt the process. And my answer to the question to all these folks is this: if you believe there was fraud in the U.S. election, you didn't question your own election? The entire House was up last year, whether or not you had an opponent. If you believe there was fraud in the election, you think it should have stopped at him? The reality is that you should be questioning whether your votes was valid too. This is the hypocrisy that really upsets me. We restrained from four-letter words, but it really does upset me. That you claim that they had fraud against him, but if you're gonna do a complete and total takeover, you just don't stop at the top of the food chain. You go right down the entire line.
Well, a question that I haven't heard asked that should be asked is, if the elections are quote unquote rigged or fixed, why isn't Hillary Clinton president?
Well, that's exactly it. And if those of us who are a little bit older than I am remember the Wisconsin, if I remember correctly, my history, conspiracy, the missing ballot machines in Wisconsin back during JFK, where he won Wisconsin narrowly to become president. And we all know people didn't want a Catholic president. This was not hidden. It's part of history, folks. That is a large segment of the population that voted against Kennedy. Catholicism was one of the reasons of many. That was another very close election. And actually, Joe Biden will be the second Catholic president, which shows you how time has moved on. This no longer became a dominant national news issue. Do people believe that, those of us in Quincy, because that's the highest turnout election ever in the city of Quincy, believe that there was a fraudulent situation in Wisconsin? I'm going to tell you, there's a lot of other people in the country that believe, yeah. Mm. But I'm going to tell you, in the city of Quincy, they're going to say no. So, some of the folks much older than I am who remember this and saying there was fraud in Georgia, ask yourself that question. What happened to the ballot machines in Wisconsin? Do you believe that was true? Once again, it's where you stand at the place you're at. It seems to be determined by the facts of your mind. Hmm.
Of course, you're well aware of much has been made about the police response by the Capitol Police Department and whether or not it would have been different had it been a Black Lives Matter protest. We talked a lot last year about racial injustice and about the police reform bill. What do you think, Jackie?
Short answer is yes. Mm-hmm. I mean, we had a wake-up call called Michigan. They tried to kidnap and kill a certain small group of radical people, try to kidnap and kill the governor of Michigan. That should have been a wake-up call that we should have increased security going in, particularly in Congress and all state houses. Governor Baker had a break-in, got past state troopers, scared the hell out of his wife and family.
Right.
I mean, our family members, you know, are along for our political ride. But, you know, they invaded your home, a protester, upset with the governor's closure orders. People are dumping trash on her lawn. Her husband, her and the governor cannot be pleased. We're just using polite words now. Pleased with the decision. I'm being very polite. I'm trying to be very polite. You know, please, you know, can't be good with the situation. And, you know, that's what state police protection. I got no protection. You want to come in my home, I have to, like, look through the door before I know what's going on.
So,
you know, Michigan was the warning sign. And, you know, my comment to a friend today was that we hit the snooze button. And that's what's troubling here. And I know law enforcement does good work. And I know law enfororcement does catch people, doesn't matter what your racial makeup is, to for the crimes you commit. I mean, there's been manhunts for murderers all over the country. Race is not a factor in who this person is that committed a crime. But in this instance in D.C., there was a failure of the intelligence community. There was a failure of the D.C. police. There's a failure of the Capitol Hill police. There was a failure all around, assuming that the president's words were not resulting in actions. Michigan was the wake-up call, and we hit the snooze button. And that's extraordinarily troubling. And the incident in Michigan was individuals who were white. If you want to look up the news coverage, they were carrying armed weapons at the capital of the state. And there was no SWAT team, there was no tear gas, there was no demand to put their guns down before they come into the building, and it was screaming, swearing, and spitting at cops. Here, you have heard incidents nationally where you have a black person spit on a cop at a protest, and next thing you know, they're on their back, you know, pushed to the ground. That did not happen in Michigan. And, you know, if you watch more than one news media outlet, given the fact that the news media was spread across all of Capitol Hill because, you know, the riot happened. Let's call it what it is. Protest by butt. It's a riot. Media had to spread out, and they had different coverage in different areas. For example, you saw some smoke on CNN. You head over to Fox, and you found out it's some incendiary devices and some, what do you call those, bangs that the cops use.
Yeah.
Right, dispersed the crowd. Tear gas eventually came out, but it came wicked late. The National Guard didn't come out too much later because National Guard is controlled by the president. And Washington, D.C. is a federal district. So the mayor only has limited powers over there because it doesn't cover the federal properties. That's federally your security. And the Capitol Police belongs to the Congress, not to the president. So, you know, I would have expected a full-blown SWAT team, you know, going in to corner these folks like did at the BLM protest because, you know, that would make sense, and then start arresting them in droves and bringing the buses. They arrested about 60-plus people. FBI, you know, is trying to identify folks because these folks use social media to broadcast their actions. You know, hopefully they end up, you know, arresting people in the hundreds that actually were involved. And, you know, they actually were telling their names and locations on television. So, I mean, you know, go get them. And this is a federal crime, folks. This isn't like going to the streets of Boston where you commit a state a felony for looting and rioting. These folks went in and destroyed a federal property. And Donald Trump, you know, bought federal troops to protect Oregon's federal courthouses. And there were some bad actors, and there's some bad behavior by the federal government on some citizens. I won't say it happened to everybody, but, you know, there was a few too. The response to this on protecting federal property is clearly night and day from this president. And I think all members of Congress, you know, who now saw firsthand the rest, what the rest of us deal with, need to. And they call it the bubble situation. And you can accuse me of this as well at the State House, as well as anybody at City Hall or Town Hall. So you live in your little bubble and think that, you know, people can't figure what's going on, and you're safe in a little bubble. But the bubble burst in the Capitol. One person died inside the halls of the Capitol building, sadly. So for those senators and congressmen that changed their vote and realized democracy needed to move forward under our Constitution as the United States, I really don't know what to say. The other ones that changed their mind, if you watch some of their speeches, was visibly shaken. they probably had to use those bomb shelters from the Cold War. And why does it take for someone to burst your bubble and someone to die to realize what you say matters, your action matters? That is extremely disappointing. And this should be a lesson to the rest of us in the public too, when you use social media, or even how you communicate with other folks. Words do matter. And I don't choose my words. I don't, you know, people see me pause a lot and trying to choose my words. You know, part of that is words do matter, not because I'm expecting political backlash, but it's trying to convey communication in a manner that I hope you understand what I'm trying to say as plain words as possible, but also try to be very civil with the plain words I use. Yeah. It's not happening in public discourse.
Was there, at the State House that day, Tacky, was there any concern that there might be problems there?
Well, the State House used to be a very open building. When I first worked there, it was well over 30 entrances which the public could enter and exit. And we always call it the People's Building, and you've heard this said of other public buildings around the country. So, you know, I love visiting the State House. I have been known at the House Chamber if I'm there and some random tourist walks in from some country or state. Or, you know, I just pull open the whatever, that velvet guardrail, whatever, and then let them down to the floor for like 5 minutes to take all the pictures they want and stuff like that, because I think people should have the fun, so to speak, to come down and take pictures from the rostrum and get a good view that I have. And a House member can do that. It's one of the privileges I have. I don't have a lot of privileges, contrary to popular belief, but one of the few privileges I have is allowing anyone down onto the House floor if I escort them. So, you know, that's how many there were. It was like 30 plus entrances when I started working in the State House as a staffer. 9/11 hit and we closed the place down to two public entrances. And all the other doors are locked. And we need only certain tap and pass cards can let you access certain doors, including myself. I can't access many of the doors. Suffolk students were famous for constantly crossing to the State House to get to class. That's not the case anymore. So security at State House, I mean, let's just stop busting down doors. You really only have two access points. What is one of the concerns is that we're a State House that actually has no buffer zone.
Right.
So you can see the front of the State House, how to get past the Hooker statue, JFK statue, up the grand staircase from Beacon Street. But as soon as you turn left on Bowdoin Street, you're basically up against one of our windows. And Ashburton Park on Bowdoin Street does provide a buffer, but, you know, you have some gates you can climb over. You move to the back of the house, back of the building, the Myrtle Street, the Senate Garage, and the loading docks. And you swing around the other side to the west side. You can see my office underneath the retaining wall. That retaining wall is not that hard to figure out how to get over. I think pretty much everybody can figure out how to get down there. And if you want to take a punch at me, it's just a piece of glass. I'm sure you could figure it out. So the State House doesn't have a buffer, and people's residences and offices are directly across the street. So if you wanted to do something nefarious, it isn't too difficult. Other state houses around the country actually have a 1,000 to 2,000 foot buffer around them, where they can put gates up and try to get it, folks. And even Boston City Hall and Quincy City Hall. I mean, these are all buildings very accessible to the public, very close to other office buildings.
Mm-hmm.
You can get them pretty easily. It's security matter. There's only so much one can do. So, you know, we've never had an incident in the State House. We've had protesters. I mean, people remember the UMass student march back in the early 90s, before my time. Obviously, we had the gay marriage protest like multiple times. People moved in the building. People were very civil. State troopers, we acknowledged them coming, was able to, keep people peaceful, made small number of arrests. And remember the Democratic National Convention 2004, after the first major event after 9/11, the State House security was beefed up. Boston was essentially emptied out. And they had snipers on the roof of the State House, as well as other buildings, keeping an eye on folks during that DNC. So, and I was around for the Boston bombing. I actually did go to the State House. I was around at 9/11 when it was the only time they ever cleared us out of the State House in my lifetime, where police showed up and said, go. Bomb threats are a regular occurrence. Big surprise at the State House. But if they can't find the substantiation, we don't have to deal with it. And anthrax. People should remember the anthrax scare. Government officers who was a primary target for that. So not to say to the public that, you know, I'm at risk, don't not be that concerned. But, you know, I am very aware of it. I've lived through quite a bit of stuff when I was a staffer and I was an elected. So no, I'm not that concerned. I mean, you know, our government buildings in the state here, including our municipal ones, have always been accessible to the public.
It's part of a free and open society that we live in, right?
It is. And I'd be very disappointed if people cannot not just come in to express their opinion, but also come in and enjoy the history. That's part of it as well. Yeah. It's not not just coming in to tell me what you think, but also, you know, I tell everybody, please appreciate this very ancient building and a government structure that's been around since 1644, you know, pre-United States, pre-American, pre-Massachusetts Constitution.
Yeah, that's right. What does 2021 look like legislatively on Beacon Hill right now for you, Tacky?
I don't know. I've been rather news consumed the last couple of days.
Sure. Yeah.
Bill filing deadline is normally the 15th. We've extended this out to February for a couple of good reasons. One is because of this medium we're using now to communicate. There is no bullpen for the freshmen. Generally, the freshman class gets a office, which is not an office. They get jammed into a single room where we do the office shuffling. They're the last ones to get an office because they're the newest one here.
Yeah.
But they also need the training on this new medium. You know, we just went to the cloud Christmas week. Staff received training on Microsoft Teams, Microsoft 360. We expect to be in this kind of work environment for at least through the majority of 2021. Again, my staff is young. They're at the bottom of the vaccine list. You can be a carrier into the state house and they're not vaccinated. Also, you can still be a carrier because the virus can be on your hands. You know, you can still be a carrier vaccinated, folks. You don't have this magic force field around you that keeps the virus away. It just gives your body a chance to properly attack the virus internally, gives your body to programming, so to speak, to know how to attack the virus in your body. But does not mean you cannot carry it on your body. So, you know, my staff is, you know, very young. They're healthy and they're dead at the list. So, and I'm not confident I'll be vaccinated either to maybe October, the way things are going.
Mm.
So the budget, governor's budget comes out end of the month. Once again, we finish the budget shortly, literally shortly, and you know, starting a new process. And as I said earlier, I don't know what the speaker's plans are because he needs to make committee assignments. So today I'm not a chairman. And will not be having any kind of leadership position as a chair or anything else until the speaker makes a appointment. So what happens next is he will have a ruse debate. The rules, the speaker's office will put out the acting chairman of rules, which is Bill Galvin from Canton. Recommendations to the House membership to what the rules will be for 2021, 2022. They have to have joint rules. Joint rules actually govern the joint committees and how legislation moves forward between the branches. And that has to be agreed on by the House and Senate. Until that agreement occurs, there are no committee assignments. And after that's done, the speaker can put a committee assignments down and then we can start to figure out how to do public hearings and things like that via this medium. I'm suspecting as opposed to running, you know, 8 or 9 huge hearings that can go, you know, between 2 and who knows how many hours. We might be doing like 10 bills at a time through this, through a sign-up process. That's probably going to recommend to it, maybe less than 10 topics at a time. So we might be looking at a very large volume of hearings, depending what committee I'm in, provided my Senate chair agrees. I need my Senate chairman to agree with this. So I'm operating as if there's nothing changed. I still take responsibility for my committee staff, and we continue to just keep on working as if nothing's changed until I'm told there's a change. And we shall see. And, you know, there's more change. I mean, Marty Walsh is leaving.
That's right. Well, apparently, yeah.
Well, we'll see. A state of the city address is coming up. So this is not Quincy politics. This is Boston politics impacting us in a different way. So we all know that Michelle Wu and Andrea Campbell has announced a run, but Kim Janey, the president of the council, is going to have a Menino situation. So she'll be the president of the council, first black woman, person of color, period, to run this major metropolitan city in the state of Massachusetts. And we have other people of color running various cities like Cambridge and my good friend, Lisa Wong from Fitchburg. But I mean, you know, a city of greater of 100,000 people, not a lot of people of color, much less women, have ascended that position in the state. Very few have. And, you know, if Marty Walsh in the State of the City address next week, I think be very much watched. We'll see if he gives us a clue that this is over. And by the way, the nomination process, let's give you a little bit of politics here. Why this announcement was made so late after like 3 months of speculation? The answer is Georgia. I'm convinced the Biden administration was waiting to see if they win Georgia, because as you've seen in the news, a 50-50 Senate and Kamala Harris being the vice president and president of the Senate is a tie-breaking vote, which means Democrats control the Senate. And this makes it much easier for, just like President Trump did, and actually Bush and Obama during the first terms, to get their nominees through the Senate. So since the party controlling is the same party of the president, moving through a committee and onto a confirmation vote was much easier. President Trump had not I wouldn't say always easy, but it was, you know, a lot of his nominations were really just taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
So the same thing, I expect the same thing happened under Joe Biden as well. So Marty Walsh being one of the biggest labor leaders in this area, but also nationally, the Republican Party was not going to allow a labor leader to be Secretary of Labor. So we lost Georgia, the Democrats lost Georgia. You know, I would think that wouldn't have happened, that nomination. I don't see the mayor of Boston resigning until his nomination is formally put into the Senate. You actually have to formally put into the Senate. So given the chaos this past week and how they're going to try to operate, you know, with a changed world, plus try to deal with the current situation of the last 12 days of President Trump. And, you know, there won't be, they have to run their own elections, which we already know Chuck Schumer is going to be the majority leader, but they have to run through their own processes. So, but the majority leader, and then you have to change offices, which and clean them up. You know, once again, thankful to administrative people and janitors and the hazmat folks and the bomb squads and all the folks to make our lives safe and functional. You know, that's going to take a bit of time. So I suspect Majority Leader Schumer will start to put together a schedule for Joe Biden's nominations once he's sworn in on the 20th. And you love the irony here. You know, Kamala Harris worked very hard to get out of the Senate, and now she has to go back.
Yep.
So if you like a little bit of political humor in this kind of like inside joke world I live in, it's like, you know, I just spent like a full year and change to get out of the Senate, and now you got to go back. And on a fairly regular basis, given how, you know, it's a 50-50 Senate. So well, it's always like, I got out and I got to go back.
The old adage, be careful what you wish for, right? This is proving true for her for at least not for now.
Yeah, politics was a funny thing, right? You just don't know what's going to happen. Yeah. So, you know, vice presidents really generally have a role that doesn't get a lot of public attention as part of being an extension of the president. So whether it be diplomatic relations or working domestic policy or just, you know, because the president can't be anywhere, that's one of the reasons they have a vice president, you know, to represent the White House in other places. Now she's going to find herself spending, I think, I'm going to tell you, quite a bit of time in the state Senate. And she'll be not just the first female vice president, a person of color or Asian and black, but also also as president of the Senate, as the presiding officer, which is why, you know, they call it majority leader and minority leader in the Senate, because the president is the vice president of the Senate. So, and like here where we elect our Senate president and runs the building, runs that chamber, the vice president is the president of the Senate, so she is the presiding officer. She doesn't run the Democratic caucus, that's due to majority leader, and, you know, obviously the minority caucus runs their own caucus, but for the purpose of running the Senate's some of the Senate's function, her only job is to cast the tie-breaking vote as the presiding officer. So given how partisan politics has become, you know, she's going to be there a lot. And there was a lot of fluffy talk about, you know, we can work together and all this stuff in D.C. During that final vote in Electoral College, but let's see how much we'll actually follow through with that.
Yeah. I agree. We'll wait and see. To reach out to you, Tacky, some good ways?
Yeah, continue to give us a call at 617-722-2014, 617-722-2014. My email has not been bombarded yet, but as Bill finally comes forward, it will be bombarded. So Tacky, T-A-C-K-E-Y .chan at mahouse.gov, C-H-A-N at mahouse.gov. So Tacky.chan at mahouse.gov. But before you try to reach out to us, we do keep a lot of information on my Facebook page. So everything from like small business grants to domestic violence, we keep kind of rotating stuff through and keep scrolling down to the bottom. I use my Facebook as informational, not telling you what I had for breakfast. And my personal Facebook is pretty much useless at this stage because we're completely focused on my public Facebook. So, you know, I strongly encourage people not to friend me. It's not going to help you. Definitely go to the public Facebook. You don't need to be a member of Facebook to use my public Facebook. And our website, tackychain.org, tackychain.org. We also try to keep up to date on human service information there as well, phone numbers, emails, and addresses of people who are looking for help. So that may be useful, as I say again. Obviously, do contact us. We would like to hear from you. And also want to remind you of more scams coming up with another round of stimulus checks. There scams will continue. The government will not ask for your money. The government, you know, will not ask for services. Be careful with your email. If you see the word Internal Revenue Service, that is not the government. I already seen one come through my email box at home, my personal email box. So, you know, once I express caution, call our office, call the AG's office, call Senator Keenan's office, call anybody find out if this is a scam or not, especially if they're looking for, like, banking information or Social Security information or asking for a gift card, asking for money. You know there's a scam someplace.
Yep, absolutely. Appreciate the opportunity to talk to you, and here we are in the new year, so we'll check back later this month.
Yeah, always happy to see you. I hope everyone had a good holiday, and we'll do this again next week.
Sounds good. Thanks, Tacky.
Thank you, Joe.